4LCI, KK4JBQ. 4LZI, KK4JBQ.
KLZI, I had it on skin and had to take it back off skin when I hurt you.
What? How you doing, Andy?
Doing okay, I guess, considering we was... I guess you heard us talking a while ago when we was talking about the records and... Archive.org and RadioBoulevard.com.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I heard maybe it was, Shane that said that, the old, brittle records, the kinds that, if you remember, there are some scenes in the old movies where woman got angry at playing the song on the radio, on the record, and she picks it off, she scoots the tone arm off the record, scratching the heck out of it, of course, but she takes it and she breaks it with a smash against the cabinet or something there, and that was the first attempt at making plastic, you know. It was real brittle. I had an old radio once upon a time that's cabinet was made out of Bakelite. It was very brittle, and I knew somehow, I guess I'd had some experience with it, I knew I had to be careful with it. It was real glossy, you know, shiny. And then later I learned that it was the first attempt at making plastic. Vinyl was much better. KK4JBQ.
4LZI, I can't write on that because I'm not right on it, but there was one particular one on that Radio Boulevard website entertainment receiver. I don't remember right now the make of it, but it was made out of Bakelite, and over all these decades, it literally, the color of the Bakelite changed from the original color to the color that it is now. Because the sun kind of affected the Bakelite, and it turned from one color to another color.
Had some, it wasn't terribly stable, besides being brittle. It could be, if you put it in a window, or near a window, where the UV comes through, yeah, it could change the color. I restored an old radio once upon a time that, well, I didn't know what I was doing. I'll have to start with that. I didn't know what I was doing. But I checked the tubes, and they all seemed to be good. Not, you know, not brand new, but good. And I just went through and made sure that all the solder joints were good. I replaced the... It had one of those, it was electric, so it had a cord, and the cord was fabric, had a fabric coating on it, and it was frayed in a couple of places, so I replaced that with a modern cord. I didn't know at the time to put a fast-acting fuse in there. I didn't know to be sure that it was wired on the negative side, that the fuse was set to, when it blew, it was connected to the positive side of the circuit. So if it should blow, the cabinet itself was not still electrified. It's the way that many of them are wired. I didn't know to do that. But anyway, I plugged it in, and that thing worked. I was terribly happy. My dad listened to the radio a lot by his easy chair, and so I gave it to my dad. And, well, anyhow, that's a good old memory. The Bakelite. Bakelite. That, it came in a lot of colors. It was mostly for radios, of course. It was wood grain. But they made it in a lot of colors. They could swirl colors in it and make it look a great deal like wood. What surprised me was how shiny it was. And I need to be careful with it, so it remained shiny. It was made by Detrola in Detroit, of all places, Detroit, Michigan. That's how it got its name. Anyhow, I just wanted to jump in here and reminisce a little bit about Bakelite. KK4JBQ.
What else he got? Well, like I said, there's a few of them on that side as well. Like I said, I don't have it in memory as which one that was, other than it was one of those entertainment receivers that they showed there. That was kind of changed color with time that it's been around. And as I also noticed in there, too, on that site, you know, I didn't know until I found out about this site, I didn't know this. Motorola was, well, I guess Motorola was round two, but the first Motorola, the oldest Motorola radio I ever seen was the one there on Archive.
K4JBQ. That site is full of vintage stuff. You don't go there to look for modern stuff. What I find fascinating is another, the man's got a YouTube channel, and he reconditions radios. He's very smart, and I learned all I know about, well, what or how you ought to approach a repair. He has walls full of testing equipment, nothing that I can have access to. But he's got this phrase that he uses. He says, especially with radios that are originally wired incorrectly, and he will improve it as he repairs it. He says, if you choose to follow along, talking to his audience, he says, if you choose to follow along, you do so at your own risk. A caution, you know. Because those radios, you touch the wrong thing and you're looking at 600 volts. That was one of the disadvantages of vacuum tube radios. Vacuum tubes required high voltage. And just about all of them had that. Come transistors, you know, when those came in, you could run those on a 6-volt power supply. And even if you get bit with 6 volts, you probably live. 600 volts, and it's doubtful. KK4JBQ.
LZI. Well, I remember an old time it used to be on this repeater here. Back in the 80s and early 90s, Ray told me, because I knew it disappeared, but I didn't know for why. But W4OGE, who lived down in Batesburg, and he had a good antenna system. Reason he could get into this repeater from down there. He told me, Ray did, that he took and was redoing, you talking about voltage and vacuum tubes. He was doing something with an amplifier, and he got bit by the high voltage, and that reason we didn't hear him back to you anymore again. That's what Ray told me. And that was, you know, an amplifier here on amateur radio. Ray didn't tell me how old the amplifier was, but it was still a vacuum tube amplifier. And that's the reason he wasn't around anymore.
Okay, well, gracious. Yes, I have a... I haven't broken into it to... And tube testers are not as widely available as they used to be. I have a small guitar amplifier. I think I picked it up at a ham fest. And I've got no use for a guitar amplifier. But I was a little bit fascinated because it had, I think, four tubes that I could recognize as tubes. You know, some tubes are shielded in such a way that until you get into it, you don't really know that you have five tubes or six tubes. You know, you don't recognize it. But anyhow, I plugged it in, turned it on, got nothing. And so I set it back, and that was, maybe 10 years ago. I never had the courage or the tube tester that's a sad thing. But if you're not careful, if you make a mistake, it could be your last one. At least that's an abundance of caution has rarely killed anybody. KK4JBQ.
What else they got? Well, I know I'm not a special that vintage gear. That's why I went ahead with that Silvertone over there and had setting up the radio days in Ohio and having someone that knew about this stuff redo it for me, because I know about the stuff, but that's as far as it goes, you know. That stuff was going out of sync, you might say, not long after I was born, so I knew I wouldn't have the wherewithal all to do with. I can pull a tube out and put it back in, but when it comes to such as that, I'll admit my limitations, and I'll want to live to enjoy it later. That Silvertone's got five tubes in it, and one in the power supply, or power shifter, as they called it, for the audio amplifier. And I got an old Radiocraft magazine here that I picked up years ago at the flea market from December 1947. You may have heard me talk about it here over the years, especially when Robert Webster used to be on here a lot. They've got in there all but this, you got to look when this was, 1947. All kinds of tube testers are available there. And I believe I've told you, I remember back in the late 70s seeing some in some of these, that Radio Shack store that used to be in Easley back during that time. But now that we're like we are now, as you say, tube testers ain't easy to come by to find.
You want a tube tester, you have to look around. You know, secondhand sources, there's probably several of them that I'm not aware of. Find you one and recondition it. But you're looking at the same cautions, I'm sure. But I always had fun with those things, you know. You found the socket that it would fit. And, well, they all came with a book, a bound, maybe it was spiral bound, I think, book that had all the tube numbers, and that you found the tube number, and it would tell you which page to go to. Okay, you go to the page where that's covered, and then there was a setting for every one of the switches and the dials, and you set it up, you know, to accept that tube. You plug it into the socket, and then you press the test button. At least that's the ones I've seen. It's just amazing that they came up with something that could test, hundreds of different kinds of tubes, depending on the settings. Yeah. Oh, I don't know how I don't know how young I was. I'll put it that way. I don't know how young I was the last time I used a tube tester. I know it was a drugstore. They all used to have them. But that's as rare these days, I suppose. Maybe more rare than a telephone booth. When's the last time you saw a telephone booth, Andy?
Poor LCI, but the last one I saw, and it's not there now. See, over the past couple years or so, they finally come and done away with it, was over inside the area with the drink machines, and I was over there at Walmart at Traveler's Rest, but it's now gone now. It is. And you was talking about redoing the cheap test. I tried that here with some of the people here in our group one time that was kind of like now Silent G, W-A-4-S-S-J, Richard Tillotson over here. He was real big and about, you know, these repeaters and Lincoln systems, about like WR4XM was. I happened to find a tube tester and another old one. I didn't restore this other silver tone, though. It come with the gig there. Another old silver tone receiver and that tube tester together, and I let Rich have it for a while and see if he could restore it, but even for a tube tester, you know, you got to be able to find the right parts. And he never could find the right parts to get it back up to par for me, and he told me that, and just give it back to me. And in the end, I ended up taking it up here to the recycling center, because of a man who can do what he could do when he was living here with these repeaters. And some of the early repeaters had vacuum tubes in them. Some of the early repeaters did. So, he couldn't do anything with it. There wasn't much else I could do with it. About the only thing you could do was hope that the tube that you need is not a high demand vacuum tube. And the tubes with that old silver tone I got over there aren't a high-demand vacuum tube, because it's just a general entertainment receiver. I can get them fairly cheap. So if I ever need another tube, that's just the way I ought to have to go.
Well, I have remembered something about that tube tester that I don't think I mentioned, that the YouTube channel is Mr. Carlson's Lab. It's terribly interesting. His videos are usually over an hour long because he's very thorough. Mr. Carlson's Lab. Well, the tube tester that he reconditioned was in a big suitcase. It was portable. And I guess that's why he thought it was that, and the fact that he has occasion to test tubes. So he thought, you know, I'll just repair this tube tester, and I have one right here. It's in a suitcase. If I need to take it somewhere, then it's portable. So anyway, I hadn't remembered that it was a suitcase type. All the ones I ever used were, you know, a large cabinet. That's what they put in drugstores, and it didn't need that large cabinet, but the storage area below was used to house replacement tubes. Now that was locked, so if you found that you had a bad tube, you had tested it, and so you went and got somebody, you know, on staff at the store and told him he needed a tube. They went and got the key. They matched the tube, and if they should have it, then you have a tube to replace. But there's nothing like that anymore. I recall years ago at Shelby, There were several vendors who had boxes and boxes and boxes of tubes. I suppose they were all good. Don't know that. Maybe you had a tube tester so you could make sure. But that's the last time I saw a collection of tubes. And that's where one would go, I suppose. If you've got a tube you need to test, that man's got the tester. And he's got a replacement tube as well. KK4JBQ.
Bell's the guy. Yeah, you're right about that, about Shelby. I saw some, last times I did go up there, I saw some tubes up there like that, and I carried the numbers for that and several times. I purchased one tube up there, and this other one here, this here ain't this one. This one here's a radio that my mother and dad bought in, I guess, 62, 61. I ain't done nothing with you. That's not in working order, but it's got little miniature tubes in it. It's a monophonic AM/FM receiver. But being that it's in the early 60s, it's a lot smaller radio with small vacuum tubes in it. I ain't done anything with it. I haven't. I still got it here, but I wished I could get it back in working order, but you know, it's, I would like to, but, you know, I got the old Silvertone from 1940 going, and if I live long enough and if I can find what I need here to get it working, so to speak, I'd like to get that back in working order, but right now I can't got nothing definite right now because it's, as you said a while ago, I remember down at the Radio Shack, just as you described that, that's how there was out there. And that I got out there at the flea market was, as you say, in a suitcase type set up. What you're describing is what black ones I saw back in those days and when I got at the flea market.
See, as time goes along, these things already rare as hen's teeth. There won't be any there. If you remember the Upstate Ham Fest there, the Blue Ridge Club Ham Fest, there was a fella whose name was Sam. He was an older fella, and he had all kinds of hard to find things. Now, some of it was clearly not anything I'd want to own, but some of it was interesting. And I bought a couple of things from him. Can't remember what they were. But anyway, that's sort of, some people go around to different ham fests looking for this kind of thing because it's becoming very rare. I suppose there are mail order or online sources for tubes. Yeah, that'd be one other way if you really wanted to repair something, if it meant something to you. You know, belong to a relative or something like that. But still, I just remember Mr. Carlson saying so many times, if you're following along, what he was suggesting there was that if you got something that's similar to this and you try to do the things that I'm doing, he would caution that you're doing so at your own risk. It was a disclaimer so that he wouldn't feel responsible if you fried yourself. Not a safe thing to work on. You should approach something like that only after you've got the knowledge to be cautious. KK4JBQ.
Poor LZI. best I remember, in the back two or three pages, at least in the QST I was looking at here, it's not the most up-to-date here that I was looking at, but there was a place somewhere listing there about tubes that you could get there. And I've heard others over here say a lot of times, talking about having to get tubes out of Russia over there. Show you how difficult tubes are, and if they're high demand tubes, you're really going to pay a premium price, I've heard it said.
Yeah, there's some linear amplifiers, tube type linear amplifiers. Those are still in use in many places. Those can be quite expensive. They're large tubes. They're made for heavy use, you know. They're wired into most linear amplifiers of that type. Are wired into 220. Well, that's just another step that I never thought, you know. We have some 220 circuits here in I think the electric clothes dryer that we have, and of course our electric stove, and oh, I don't know, maybe something involving the heating and air conditioning is 220. But I think I know enough to stay away from stuff like that. I've been bit by single phase 120, and I don't want anything more to do with it. I've been bit a couple of times, but when I was a child, you know. I got a little more to lose right now. I don't think my body could take some of the things I used to do when I was a child. I was very inquisitive. I wanted to see what everything was made of. And I'm more cautious and a little older. KK4JBQ.
This ain't just the ham band only, but talking about on the other parts of the HF frequencies, not just amateur exclusively, some of these stations around here, like WBCQ Monticello Mesa, there's one down in Florida, and a couple back over here in Tennessee that run 100,000 watts. There is. And they, some of them have multiple transmitters for different frequencies, but you know at that kind of wattage, not just the transmitter, but whatever kind of amplifier system they got, I mean, they got vacuum tubes that would eat a power bill up probably in short order time. That particular one down in Okeechobee, Florida on 5950, WRMI, they charged the people who broadcast there on that station $1 a minute, they do. You know, whether it's a half hour, hour, or 2 hour program. I've just thought about it at times. I'd hate to think what kind of power bill some of these stations have. There was one KVOA out in California. They had to go off the air partly because they couldn't pay the power bill to stay on the air.
Indeed, economics will, it speaks loudly. Yes, if you have the outgo, you've got to have the income. And it's, you know, that's just to get the signal on the air. You still got to pay the talent that sits in front of the microphone, and all of the other various things. It's a you know, it's a business. I'm just glad that radio is still as active as it is. I listen to three stations that I'm kind of fond of. I bounce back and forth between those three stations. But if you just turn on an FM, I'm talking about FM here, you just turn on the FM dial and sweep the dial, I don't know. I don't live. Well, let's put it another way. I live in a place where signals like that are challenged. But there has to be nearly 100 across the FM band. AM, not so many. Because there's not so many that still survive, I suppose. But FM is still quite popular. Most of it's music. But some of it is talk. And some of it's the kind of talk that you and I are doing right now. Some of it's religious, of course. But it's still amazing that that radio is still as popular as it is. Let's see, I think the radio in my car will scan. I believe it's one of the things that it does. And so I can scan the FM dial there, and it pauses for a little bit on each one of those and keeps going. It's just like, you know, a normal scanner, but it's not as fast as a normal scanner would be. Anyhow, I'm proud that there's still radio out there. But you know, that is, it's just amazing that all of that is in the air around us all the time. Or, you know, if I'm sitting here in my chair or if I'm driving down the road, it's still in the air. And I've never seen, I don't think anybody has ever seen the propagation that we talk about. I understand a little more about that than I did when I was younger, about how radio waves propagate, but it's still amazing to me that it's that all of it, all at once, you know, the radio just differentiates between the big pool with all those signals in it. Makes me wonder sometimes if somehow we are not affected by all the signals that are in the air all around us. It's a little scary. I don't think about that for long. KK4JBQ.
Hell's the guy. One thing I've learned, as you say, whether it's commercial FM or on HF, when you're talking power levels 50,000 to 100,000 watts or more, you can bet there's vacuum tubes involved. And when there's vacuum tubes involved, they got one heck of a power bill there to deal with. You was talking about FM. Like that, it's on, over there with Hogback Mountain, WORD. I remember back in the 90s when that was WSPA-FM, Light Music. Now it's talk radio, of course. They always saying that transmitter's a 100,000-watt transmitter. One thing about it, if there's any solid state can handle that now, I'm not aware of it anyway. But if they're using vacuum tubes like everybody else in the HF spectrum's using, they better be bringing in the income, because at that power level, it's going to eat the power like you wouldn't believe it. Consume the wattage, the power.
That's all true. And I don't wonder about, I traveled once upon a time to Niagara Falls. It was a wonderful trip. And I got to stand right at the edge of the falls and watch all that water go over. And I was amazed to just stand there and imagine that all that water has been going over the falls for something like thousands of years. And it was a tremendous amount of water. Tremendous. Now, New York State uses the power of that water, the hydroelectric power of that water, to power much of New York City, for that matter. So it takes power to make electricity. Hydroelectric is the cleanest way to do it. Yes, a radio station will consume a great deal of power. I know this station that you're speaking of. Didn't know that was on Hogback Mountain, though. And it's one of the three stations I listen to from time to time. Makes me think about a lot of things at once. KK4JBQ.
Poor LZI, well, you listen at times when some of the talk shows are starting to come on around 6 minutes, 5 minutes after the hour, they'll say come on there saying 100,000 watts here on Hogback Mountain. Being that you hadn't been here that long, you might not know where Hogback Mountain is, but it's the Hogback Mountain over there in Spartanburg County, and like I said, I remember what it used to be decades ago, because that used to be on 1330 AM. It was back during that time instead of on that FM station. As you was talking about the talk shows here on commercial radio, a lot of them started out on AM, and over the past two or three decades kind of moved over to FM. I remember when that was on 1330 AM there in Greenville. Up here where I'm at, you know, you could hear it in the daytime, but at night, they're not a clear, still not a clear channel frequency. And I can't hear it up here at night.
You cannot hear it at night.
I can't hear it at night. I couldn't then, and I can't now. That 1330 frequency.
Well, that's odd. Nighttime reception is usually better. Well, maybe it isn't for FM. But for AM, nighttime, the propagation changes in the nighttime. It's true also that at nighttime some stations are required to reduce their power. That might be it. KK4JBQ.
For hell's the guy, you got it right there. Say like WSN, they're on 24/7. The only thing WSN does, they change the power level and orientation of their antenna. This 1330 here never was a station like WSN. They kind of, there was, if you do the research, I don't remember the website now, but back in the 20s, in the early 30s, there was a lot of issues about that, from medium wave to LF, low frequency, about AM broadcast that time. And some of those stations at the time, due to that interference issue, at that time, they hadn't worked it out, was interfering with one another. And it wasn't until about 1935, judging from this book I got on the silver tone receivers here, that they finally worked it out to being where it's at now. And when they done that, some stations have clearance for all day, all night, and others like 13. 1930, which way back used to be WYFF-A, way back then it was. The TV station down here sold it out. At night. Now, I could get halfway from here. At the time, I worked out at 12 gallon between Easley and Greenville. I could get out there, and I could pick it back up at night in the car. But up here, no hearing it.
Picture in my mind, I've seen I don't know where I saw this. While you were talking, I was trying to remember where I saw this, but it was a discussion on radio stations, their power transmission, and the interesting thing about this, I must have watched it on the computer, the interesting thing about this is that they showed the coverage pattern during the daytime, during the night, and if they had to make a change, it was just like you say, they had to not interfere with other stations. Yeah. That seemed very complicated. But, makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah. Well, Andy, it's, I'm just watching the clock here. I know you've got medicine to take in a little bit, so thanks for coming back to me. And it's been good talking with you. And maybe sometime, if as my dad was very fond of saying, whenever he ended a telephone conversation, he never talked like this on the radio. Bless his heart. I think he would have liked it had he known about it. But he would always say, if we live to talk to one another again, that'd please me. That's what he would say. And it was always a way, I don't know. You heard the expression, old people. Well, my dad wasn't all that old. I mean, at the time I started picking this up, he'd be talking on the telephone to somebody, and he says, well, if we live to speak again, I'll be glad to talk with you. And I always thought that was, you know, it was a positive thing to say, but it could also be taken as a negative thing, in a way. But it just made me think that, think to say that. If we live to talk to one another again, Andy, I'll be pleased to talk with you. You have a good night. And again, thanks for coming back to me. KK4, JPQ. I'll be clear on your final. 7-3.
Well, see, I was on also learned somewhat also from WSN's own website as well, some of it. WSN went on air about the same time the Opry come into being, wherever they was holding it at that time, 1925. Well, from 1925 to 1928, during that time of fluctuation between medium wave and LF, they was operating and transmitting on another frequency. They didn't list it because it hasn't been used in decades, just the one now. Well, in 1928, they got the current frequency their own. They was probably one of the first trying to shift over, judging from the way the radio catalog of Sears radios was shown there. One of the first to shift over to the way it is now, where in 1935, it was pretty much set there. Well, in 1928, when they went on 650, that's when WSM become the 24/7, where they change antenna orientation and the power levels. Well, a lot of these others here, that rule has been like that forever and a day when it comes to the AM medium wave. And these others They're not hurt very well. It's only within town there. Kind of like what I told you another thing about back during the 30s, too. What's now with weather that's on 162.55 was up there on the medium wave band, too, at that time. Because I see some of these old mid-30s several tones that talked about it being up there in the medium wave band up there near what can become the broadcast band. So lots of changes and some, but the only thing that stayed stable is this about the medium wave broadcast band. Since 1935, other than the police and the weather station changes, everything's been pretty much the same. KK4JBQ, KI4LZI.
Good night, Andy. KK4JBQ clear.